I'm Faith Middleton in New Haven, and this show is about the richness of life. It's The Book Show, a live call-in. Great reads coming your way in this hour. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Let us know about a book you've liked. Book Club members, what are you reading? 203-776-WNPR. That's 203-776-WNPR. Tell us on Facebook now. Search The Faith Middleton Show or tweet us at FaithWNPR. In fact, we have Facebook messages right now. My book buddies are here. Roxanne Cody of RJ Julia Booksellers joins us by phone this time because she happens to be in California. Lee Jacobus, editor of the college textbook A World of Ideas, is here in the studio along with Marion Roy, our volunteer associate producer on this show and an avid reader. And we have Pat Towers as our special guest. She was a founding editor of Vanity Fair, the weekly magazine 7 Days. She's held highly regarded positions in book publishing and journalism, including Harcourt, Mirabella, Elle, O, the Oprah magazine, and she was editor at the New York Times Book Review. And let me put it this way. When a major magazine wants somebody great to recommend books, somebody says, we need Pat Towers. That's usually how it happens. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Oh, thank you, Faith. Thank you very much. I love being here.
Pat, why don't we start with you? And again, as you're listening, please join us, 203-776-9677. Tell us about a book you love.
Okay, here's a book I love that has just come out, and it's called For the Benefit of Those Who See, Dispatches from the World of the Blind, written by Rosemary Mahoney. Mm. Now, this book is such a joyful book, among other things. Rosemary Mahoney is one of those writers, if you haven't read her before, I don't know any writer who brings people alive on the page better than Rosemary Mahoney. You never forget the people you meet on her pages. And she has this particular ability. She has an incredibly strong visual sense. She cannot not say what she sees. So there's something particularly interesting about her writing about dispatches from the world of the blind. And this came about because she was sent by a magazine to interview a wonderful German woman named Sabria Ten Birken, who had started a school for blind children in Tibet called Braille Without Borders. This is an amazing woman. And Rosemary could not think of anything more frightening, really, than to be blind. I mean, she could not imagine how terrible it would be to be blind. So that was the beginning of this book. The book is really her account of coming to meet these amazing people and of coming to realize that, you know, all human beings for many, many years have been afraid of blind people. And as a matter of fact, in Tibet, one of the reasons Sabria started this school was because she was going through Tibet. She's blind herself. And there are all these children, blind children, that the Tibetans felt had done something bad in an earlier life.
Mm.
They were just put away, and no one was teaching them. And that's what brought her to this. Well, this is an ancient fear of people about being blind. And what Rosemary discovers is, first of all, the blindness is not something that makes people odd or other. And these people that you meet are so funny. At one point, she allows herself to be blindfolded by these two young women, and they take her through Lhasa. And their senses, they are blind. They're taking her. She's now blind because she can't see, and she realizes she's perceiving the world in a whole other way.
What is this title again?
The title is For the Benefit of Those Who See, Dispatches from the World of the Blind, and it's by Rosemary Mahoney.
Oh, I have got to read this. We're going to have her on the show, I think. All right. Mm. Very, very good, Pat. Stay with us. We got a caller here. This is Steve, Faith Middleton, and the gang. Welcome to the book show.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead, Steve.
I am actually in the middle of Blackwater, Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. And it's by Jeremy, I want to say Scahill, S-C-A-H-I-L-L. And this book might not be for everybody, but it really speaks to how these private
these private defense contractors handle themselves overseas. And it's kind of scary. You know, they are really not held accountable for anything they do over there. Mm. And it's, like I said, it's actually kind of terrifying when you break it down.
Is the author a defense contractor or a journalist?
He's a journalist.
Yeah, okay. And tell me the name again.
It's Blackwater.
Blackwater, okay, great.
Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army.
Interesting.
It's really a gripping read. Like I said, I'm not done with it yet, but
okay.
It's a page-turner.
Great.
And it might not be for everybody, but Everybody should read it. It's good to kind of be informed.
Steve, thank you for participating in this show. It means a lot. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Blackwater, 203-776-9677. Roxanne Cody is phoning us from California this time. Hey, Roxanne.
Hello. How are you all?
We're great. Go ahead. So you have better weather than we do.
Well, actually, it's cool out here, but it's going to be a little tricky to complain with everything going on in Connecticut. So I'll say, yes, it's beautiful.
Okay. So what are you reading you love?
So I am reading One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories by P.J. Novak. And P.J. Novak is probably best known for being on The Office, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
He has written this collection of short stories that just turn the world upside down. I think of him as Humpa Lahiri meets David Sedaris meets George Saunders, because he has one called The Rematch, which is the hare and the tortoise had their race. And the hare lost, and, you know, he was humiliated by this. So he plans this rematch and then it talks about the rematch. And so what he does is you could read this on three different levels. One is the ridiculous. And he does this with all sorts of topics, like an award show that's for the world's best anything. And then it's love, laughter, and nothing. And then you read it at another level, and you realize how much intelligence this guy is bringing to things that we look at all the time. And in that way that humor makes us learn something in a more vivid way, he uses humor and really clever writing to really touch us with every one of these stories. He is a stunning new voice in short stories. And not everybody loves short stories. Some of these are a page long, some are 10 pages long. But I can assure you that you will be thrilled to have read these. Mm. Just thrilled. They are the most fun, insightful short stories I've read in a long time.
Oh, so author and title one more time.
One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories by B.J. Novak, Novak.
One More Thing. All right. Thank you, Roxanne. Craig, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the show.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Craig. Go ahead.
The name of the book is The Boys in the Boat. It's not a typical sports book. In fact, I don't know much about crew. I'm not a crew fan. My son gave this to me for Christmas. It's about the 1936 University of Washington crew that won the gold medal at the Berlin Olympics. It's more a study of the culture of the time, how hard it was to make a living, to go to college in those days, how they were treated in Berlin by Hitler and his associates, what was going on in Hitler to build the facilities, what was going on in Germany to build the facilities for the Olympics. Very interesting. Talks about the landmark win by the University of Washington over such teams as Yale, Harvard, Penn, Princeton, and other Eastern powers that basically ruled intercollegiate rowing at the time. But I need to repeat, it's not a sports book. It's very interesting. I learned a lot about crew, but I learned more about what it was like to try to make enough money to go to college in those days. Most of these kids, they weren't on scholarships. They basically or working class people from the West competing against rich Easterners who had grown up with a silver spoon in their mouth and an oar in their hand.
You know, Craig, what I'm thinking is what a great BBC series this would make. Thank you. Thank you very much. The Boys in the Boat.
Right.
Thank you, Craig.
Have a good day.
All right, you two call us anytime. Lee Jacobus, what do you have?
Well, I've got a book called Afghan Post, One Soldier's Correspondence from America's Forgotten War. It's by Adrian Bonnenberger. He is a Yale graduate who decided to be to do the patriotic thing and to go into the army and become an officer. He then became a ranger, and he was sent off to Afghanistan. Now, this book is a collection of letters to her, to his lover, to his parents, to his comrades in arms. He has a lot of letters to people who are themselves commanders or soldiers over there in Iraq or in Afghanistan.
So it's more like a book of letters.
It's a book of letters, and it's a book that includes also some journal entries. And it what it does is it tells the story from his point of view of how he changed as an individual in relationship to the war. He sometimes thinks the war is one of the most important things we're doing, and sometimes he thinks it's one of the most hopeless things he's doing. And he saw a tremendous amount of bloodshed and horror there. He had his own buddies, his own people under his own command blown up by landmines. He went in for one tour and then went back and then decided he had to go back again. And he went back as a second to his second tour, and he eventually left the army. He finished his tours, he finished his obligations, and he realized at the end that he was a very different man from the man that went into that that war. This is a deeply touching book. It has some wonderful features. There are several sections, and each section has a glossary. There's a word that he uses that is really wonderful. It's called FOBIT, F-O-B-B-I-T. F-O-B means a forward operating base, and a FOBIT is a person who spent his entire tour as a kind of secretary in a forward operating base, but then told everybody how wild and heroic he was when he was in the service. So in other words, it's somebody that he holds contempt for. It's a great term, FOBIT. Mm-hmm. But Adrian Bonnenberger tells it just like it is. He doesn't hold anything back, and he makes you really feel you understand him. It's called Afghan Post, One Soldier's Correspondence from America's Forgotten War, and it's just been published in February.
All right. Thank you so much, Lee. Marion Roy, what do you have?
I have a book of fiction that's very different than all of the other books that have been discussed. It's called By Blood by Ellen Ullman. That's U-L-L-M-A-N. And it's about a disgraced professor who comes to San Francisco in 1970 and takes an office to try and get himself together, hoping he'll get his job back. He's kind of the voice of the book, but he's also crazy, which makes it really interesting to read the book. He hears crows and voices, and he's next door to a psychiatrist, and he begins to hear sounds through the wall and realizes that it's a psychiatrist who's having a session with a young lesbian girl who's searching for her adoptive family. And he becomes obsessed with these therapy sessions and begins to call the young girl his patient. And as you read the book, you realize that there's really something wrong with this man, but he's become obsessed with trying to find out who her adoptive parents were and where they came, who her parents were, her biological parents were, where they came from. So there are just incredible themes in this, and I've provided a lot of therapy for people, and maybe that's why I become obsessed with the book, but I almost felt like I was getting into his soul as I was reading it. He started searching about adoption, questions about therapy, questions about the therapist who ends up divulging very little about herself, but you find out that her father was a Nazi. And then you start finding out about the patient, and he starts getting information about the patient's family. And I don't want to tell too much about it because the book is just incredible. I just became obsessed with the book, and I feel like I need to read it again. And I think people would really be interested in getting involved in it. So the name of the book is By Blood by Ellen Ullman.
Okay, we have Pat Towers coming up next with a selection. She has a book she loves. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the book show. I'm loving this edition. Stay with us.
Dear Sarah, madam, would you read my book? It took me years to write it. Would you take a look? It's based on a novel by a man named Lee. And I need a job, so I wanna be a paperback writer. Paperback writer. It's a dirty story of a dirty man.
I'm Faith Middleton. You can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Right now, you can see our list of books. You can see delicious recipes for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, and much more. Click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show, and you will see the link to the food schmooze if you're thinking about what to make for dinner or for the coming weekend. We have as our special guest Pat Towers. Our other special guest, we have Marion Roy in the studio, Roxanne Cody, Lee Jacobus here with us as always. I wanted to just jump in and say, Pat, that I have reread E.B. White's Here is New York, and just had the best time, was struck again about how prescient he was about something someday, perhaps flying over New York City and doing great damage to buildings and the people there. I didn't catch that the first time I read it, and it sent a chill down my spine. And also his view about New York being an ever-changing place. And I've been spending a lot of time in New York, and I realize how true that is. And it's true for New Yorkers, as you are. You must feel that things are never the same.
They're never the same. And, you know, I'm just going to mention this book. In fact, it's not the one I wanted to talk about. But I just read for the first time, I should have read it years ago, Joyce Johnson's book, Minor Characters, which is set in the 50s as a young woman coming of age, and talk about change in that period. And she was involved with Jack Kerouac. But it's really about a young woman finding herself, leaving home on the Upper West Side, going to the Village. Wonderful piece of writing, you know, just lovely. I just want to remind people of this great book. But the book that I wanted to mention that I cannot understand why I had never heard of this book. It's a book called Bombingham by Anthony Grooms, which I came across only recently. It was published a while ago. It's set in Birmingham, Alabama, summer of 1963, this tumultuous moment in our history, really, with the Civil Rights Movement and Reverend Shuttleworth and Martin Luther King. But it's told from the perspective of a young black boy from a middle-class black family who are in the middle of their own sort of personal crisis. The mother has been diagnosed with cancer. And the boy is really the narrator through most of the book. And his voice, trying to figure it out, he and his best friend Lamar have a paper route. And while they are going through their childhood, all this is going on around them. And you get the sense of that moment that is so strong and so moving, and really the most compassionate book. I feel everyone in America this is not a thing we should forget, that and it's 51 years since that moment, and only a few months later, JFK was killed. And you're reading this book, you just get the sense of what happened, how brave so many people were, the sense of the country, and that one of the great subjects of this country. Now, this book, it turns out, why did I not hear this book? I opened and looked at the date when it was published. It was published in 2001. And then I found out that it was published, because I talked to the writer, it was published 3 days after 9/11, a book called Bombingham. And he said to me that there were almost no reviews. The Washington Post reviewed and said, you know, an important, wonderful book. But there were very few other reviews. He said his book tour took him through one empty airport after another. It's a very he's a very gentle man. He said, well, you know, people talk about timing. But I thought that book didn't disappear because it's so good, but that's why I'd never heard of it.
Wow.
So I just would like people to know this book is just an extraordinarily good book, totally absorbing, totally beautifully written. Anyway, that's what I wanted to tell you about.
That sounds good. It's what strikes me about a book like this is its ability to bring a real intimacy to a time, a moment that can reach us only to a certain degree, and it makes it all so human. Thank you, Pat. Marion, do you know this book?
No, I don't know the book, but I just wanted to add that I was living in Tuscaloosa, Alabama at that time and teaching in an elementary school. And so really have a sense of that whole period of time and what it was like living through it during the Selma marches and just an incredible time. And coming from New York, it was really quite an eye-opener.
Wow. So that's Bombingham by Anthony Grooms. Roxanne, what do you have?
Well, that brings two books I was going to mention together that I'll mention each one briefly. One is Will Haygood, who wanted to think about an article he wanted to write on the eve of Obama's first inauguration about someone who would be most impacted by the notion of a black man becoming president. And he wrote a piece about Eugene Allen, who was the butler, who was a butler in the White House under eight presidents and became the basis for the movie that's currently out, produced or directed by Lee Daniels. And Will Haygood put together a book that includes his original thinking and understanding that put together the article, then covers his relationship with Eugene Allen and his wife, Helene, subsequent to the publishing of the article, and then into the making of the movie. And Pat, to your point, what watching or learning all of this through the eyes of Eugene Allen, who's a black man who was a butler, and watching presidents make a decision about civil rights from Truman all the way through Reagan, was, you know, an avid reminder to those of us who lived through it. But it's also a reminder about invisibles of every type that are sort of making everything work and are being impacted by decisions being made but are not allowed to say anything or not allowed to react in any way. And Will Haygood, who has also written books about other people that have made a big difference, like Sidney Poitier or Sammy Davis Jr., in the way we view blacks, has taken the story of Eugene Allen, and you're just struck by what this man witnessed, how he lived. You know, the movie changes some of what's real, and, you know, it helps you understand what was made up for the movie to make a point and not. So that's one book I want to mention called The Butler, A Witness to History by Will Haygood.
Okay, and the other one?
It's called Wash by Margaret Winkler. I mentioned this when this came out in hardcover. It's out in paper now. And it is set pre-Civil War, and it's the story of a slave by the name of Washington who is trying to learn how to live with the kind of inner strength to allow him to survive slavery with any kind of dignity that he can marshal. And it tells the story in a way that is almost poetic in the language that Margaret Winkler uses. And she juxtaposes it with a story about the plantation owner who uses Wash and rents him out for breeding other plantation owners. And I think a lot of times many people shy away from reading these books. It just feels like too much bad down news, and they want to read happy things. I think these are important books for us to read to understand what our history is about and to make sure that little ways in which this could happen again don't.
Okay, so that's Wash by Margaret Winkler, and that's out in paperback now.
Exactly.
Okay. Roxanne, thank you so much for joining
You're
us
welcome.
On the show.
Have a good day.
All right, you too. All right, take care, you too. Bye-bye. 203-776-9677. I wanted to just jump in and mention that I got my hands on an early galley of Amy Bloom's new novel, which will be coming out this summer. And it's called Lucky Us, and it is, I'm halfway through, it is terrific. I have a dear friend who grew up with, as a young woman, as an actress, with Bob Fosse, and so she has just finished the biography of Bob Fosse and says it is a very fair and fascinating look at his life. And she ended up saying to me, I was there. It really was this way. So for people who still love Bob Fosse and the things that he did, that's interesting. Pat, what do you have?
Well, interesting, you're talking about a book coming out. I just read a book coming out in April that I was riveted by. This is by Walter Kern, and the book is called Blood Will Out, The True Story of a Murder, a Mystery, and a Masquerade. In 1998, Walter Kern was a young novelist. You know, he was struggling with a dissolving marriage, and he was the father. He meets a man who called himself Clark Rockefeller, and Walter actually drove a crippled dog from Montana to New York because Clark Rockefeller had heard about this dog and wanted to adopt him and wrote letters. And Walter decided he wanted to meet this Rockefeller scion, and he drives the dog across, meets him, and he is friends with Clark Rockefeller for many years, I'm going to say around 15 years, who is a very odd character, kind of secretive banker and art collector, who was ultimately exposed as a serial imposter, brought to trial in Los Angeles for a murder many years earlier. And this book is about Walter Kern coming. First of all, he cannot believe that this man he's known all these years. He says, well, this can't possibly be true. And then he thinks, well, if he was this, then what was I? A fool? You know, and then it's the whole question of the American con, you know, this shape-shifting trickster of American myth and literature, many books. And Walter sort of makes his way painfully through his own interest in, quote, Clark Rockefeller as a rich man, his own unease sometimes in the world, what drew him to this man, and then he goes and covers the trial. It is a study of this character that you can't quite find, this slippery con man. What was this about? How was he doing? And, I mean, as I got to the end of the book, I didn't want it to end because the writing is so good. He is such a good writer, Walter Kern. But it was the psychological tension in it as he's confronting him one thing after another. And just as you're getting toward the end, there's like one crucial scene, and then it heights to a second crucial thing, and then a third, and I think, I don't want this to end.
Wow.
It's so riveting.
Isn't this the best title? How did that go again? Blood Will Out. What were the three words they put with it? Murder.
Murder, a Mystery, and a Masquerade.
Yeah, I know. That's irrestible. It's just, what's
it's
that?
Really
what's
a
that?
Wonderful book,
what's that?
It's really about psychology and us, and it's very personal. It's about Walter, and it's actually fascinating.
So would you say that was a way to have done? That what he really did was a memoir.
Yes, it is very much a personal book.
Yeah,
And otherwise, you know, whenever I'm reading, I always need to have a sense of who is the person telling me this, whatever it is, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, because you have that one-on-one relationship. That's the wonderful thing about reading, that it's just you and the writer. And unless you have this sense of this person, not that you know everything about them, but there's something about the writers that put themselves on the page in some way. Well, this book does that. Rosemary Mahoney's book does that. Those are the writers that I just am thrilled by.
When is Blood Will Out coming out?
April, but I'm not sure the exact date. Okay. Sometime in April.
The reason I asked about whether you saw this as a memoir is that I remember I was, Lee and Marion also, I remember I was getting bored with memoirs that went in this fashion April 17th.
Yes, of course,
I went to the store and I thought, oh my God. And then a series of memoirs came out that just rocked my world because of the way they were done. I think about Phyllis Rose's book, A Year of Reading Proust,
yes,
and she would talk about she and her husband watching Jeopardy on TV trays and eating their dinner each night. And I thought, this is, in one minute she'd be saying something ethereal about Proust, and the next minute she'd be having scrambled eggs and watching Jeopardy. And I thought, oh, my God, this is how a memoir can be.
Right.
This
that's
is amazing.
That's how we live.
Yeah, I think that's right. I agree with you totally. Yeah.
I love them when they're outside the box that way. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Marion Roy, what do you have?
The book that I have is really interesting and takes place in a strange place. It's called The Light Between Oceans by M.L. Stedman. And it actually takes place in Australia, on an island way offshore called Janus Rock. And it's a very isolated island. And what it talks about is this lighthouse keeper who lives on the island. And it's incredibly descriptive. It talks about what it's like to be isolated on an island, beautiful descriptions of what the ocean is like and what the air feels like and what it's like inside a lighthouse. But then he meets this woman after being on the island for 3 months and coming on shore, and he brings her back as his wife. And what happens is she has several miscarriages, and she's longing for a baby, and a boat washes up on shore, and she hears the cry of the baby. And that's the beginning of really thinking about our individual needs and a moral struggle, because what ends up happening is she keeps the baby, and her husband wants to find out who this baby belongs to and return it to its mother. But they live on this isolated island. She figures nobody's going to find out. And she brings up the baby. And the husband is going through this horrible struggle about needing to find the mother, and her going through this struggle about bonding with the baby and needing a baby and really wanting to keep it. So that whole struggle and thought about individual needs and what's going on and what's going to happen with her and the baby really keeps you reading the book. You can't put it down. And
yeah, I've heard this before about this book.
It's just, it's beautifully written, and it's just a page turner. It's really fascinating.
Can you see the pitch meeting? I can just imagine the pitch meeting for that book. Can't you just see it? Here's what happens. They're in the lighthouse on an island, and the baby washes up on shore, and the woman just happens to want to have a baby, and then what do we do with the baby? I can just see the whole thing.
I could say this is a movie, actually.
I'll give you 5 minutes. This is definitely coming out as a movie in the next year. 203-776-9677. Pat Tower, stay where you are. We're going to take a short break here on The Book Show, and we'll be right back with more great reads.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple.
You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. A special thanks, of course, to our guests, Pat Towers and Marion Roy and Lee Jacobus, my book buddies on the show today. I wanted to jump in and quickly mention that we had Yale psychology professor Paul and researcher Paul Bloom on the show. He has done a book called Just Babies, The Origins of Good and Evil, and it is, I really very much like this book, and Marion, I know you've read it too. And I know we disagree about whether, you know, how easy a read it is. I was very, it was quite fascinating for me. Excuse me. And it's a whole discussion of Paul's belief that babies come into the world not as blank slates, but with a whole moral sensibility. Mm. Also, a sense of bigotry. You know, there's a good side and a bad side to this. So as he was leaving, he said to me, "You've got to read My Age of Anxiety by Scott Stossel." He said it will just floor you. Mm-hmm. And so I just saw a review in the Times about this book, and it's called My Age of Anxiety, Fear, Hope, Dread, and the Search for Peace of Mind. We're going to have him on the show on March 4th to talk about this. Pat, have you read this by any chance? Crippling.
No, I haven't. I would love to read it. No, I'm very interested in reading it.
He has every imaginable anxiety that you can even, you can't dream some of these up. I had no idea
that
he's
taken every possible cure toward it,
too. And yeah, and how he gets through the world is amazing in one piece. And so it's really quite amazing to think about somebody's wiring.
That's right.
And not much to do about it. Okay, Lee, what do you have quickly?
Well, I'm trying to catch up with Toni Morrison. I haven't been reading enough of her, and I decided to read Paradise, which is a very unusual book. It begins and ends with a massacre, as a matter of fact, and it's set in the town of Ruby, Oklahoma in 1950. It's an all-black town. Now, it's been founded by a number of families who had been rejected by other all-black towns, and they decided to set up their own all-black town as a kind of paradise. The very first sentence of the book is, "They shoot the white girl first." And when Toni Morrison was interviewed about this, she said that, yes, she started the book with that phrase, and she originally thought she was writing about race. But she realized somewhere deep into the book that she was really writing about gender. And she's also writing about the great American experiment of establishing a kind of ideal community. And this ideal community is their version of an Eden. And as you know, paradise soured at one point, as we know in the Bible, had its problems. And Ruby sours because it's a highly patriarchal community. And outside that community, 17 miles away from Ruby, is a place that is always known as the convent. It's where a lot of battered women are, a lot of women who are having tremendous struggles with life, and they, for some reason or other, have encouraged the black patriarchal community to want to kill them. And in other words, there's a kind of serpent that's here, that's inside this particular community, and it's a serpent of patriarchy. And they begin by going out and killing. They shoot the white girl first. We never know who the white girl is. She's never identified. Mm-hmm. So she's just a counter in this particular thing. The women who are identified are Mavis and Consolata and others. And their stories are told in great detail. Mm-hmm. And the book ends, of course, tragically. But it's a fascinating book. It demands a lot of reflection. It's not a simple and easy read. It's typical of her books. It's layered. It is not a linear narrative. It interrupts itself. But each of the narratives that come into this are really quite fascinating. She takes a real risk in a book like this and forces you to really think about what you're reading and what the implications of it are. So it's Paradise. It's a remarkable book by Toni Morrison, who is our Nobel Prize-winning author, and well worth our attention.
Thank you. Pat Towers, what do you love?
Well, I have so many books So let me think which one. Well, this book, Rachel Kushner's book, The Flamethrowers. I don't know. Uh-huh. Have you talked about this book on the air?
I think somebody did recently, but I don't remember what. So tell me.
Well, it's she is, you know, a young writer. This is her second book. James Wood in The New Yorker just gave it the biggest rave I've ever read, and so I picked up the book, took it away with me on a trip. It is absolutely glorious writing. She is such a storyteller. It's set in the 70s, and the heroine she's nicknamed Reno. She rides a motorcycle. She comes from Reno. She comes to New York. She gets involved in the New York art world in the 70s. The book is bursting with energy and stories and characters. James Wood said, I love this line, this flamethrowers is scintillatingly alive, and it ripples with stories, anecdotes, set piece monologues, hapless adventures. But she is, I haven't come across a young writer that struck me as, she has a great big long career in front of her. And the book, I think, is just recently out in paperback, so I recommend it to you if you haven't.
So did you care about the people in the book?
I cared about Reno. I cared about the people. Well, yeah, I cared about them. But she brings you into each moment. Like if she's on the motorcycle describing the desert, you are there. Mm-hmm. Wherever she takes you, if you are in an art gallery and there's a big party going on, you are there. She simply moves you right into it. It's like as though you're in a movie. I'm not sure that I fell in love with the characters. I was just in these places. She's in Italy. She's involved with a terrorist. I mean, she moves you all around in this period. It's quite the sweep of it. It's quite astonishing.
Well,
there are not many writers who can do that now, and I was just kind of thrilled to see this. The sentence by sentence is wonderful. So you're interesting. You're asking a nice question. I'm not sure how much I cared about the characters. I was involved in the scenes enormously.
Yeah, so I'm so glad to hear that from you because it gives me a chance to mention this book. I have not read this yet, but it is Lance Weller's book. It came out in paperback called Wilderness. Did you read this by any chance?
No, I haven't.
So I see on the back a quote from Annie Dillard who says, "Here is a book in the great tradition of the novel, a vivid world that wraps and holds the reader who can well lose himself in its grandeur. The character is the beloved Abel Truman. The landscapes are huge. Abel's story is both simple and rich, the novel unforgettable." And so I read about the first five pages because of, I know that Annie Dillard loves setting.
Yeah.
And it made me, in the first five pages, so much about setting. And I thought, you know, I know so many people who read for that. A gorgeous description of setting is enough.
Yeah, but her sense of place is astounding. And I think personally that a sense of place in any piece of literature is enormously important. I really think that way. I feel that way. And when I see it in fiction, or in nonfiction, really, I'm very moved. I once corresponded with her about that.
Annie Dillard?
Yeah.
Well, it's almost as if the setting is a character.
Well, yes, it is like a character. You're right. And because it has an impetus that moves you. It has an emotional valence. And that's what, you know, you're going to a good book for. You want your emotions to be involved. And setting does that.
And I am one of the weirdos who does not rise to that. Seriously, I am unlike so many people in that category. And when I get to that part where they start doing the landscapes and the evil, you can hear the pages turning because I think, okay, let's get back to the intimate person again, which is funny. You know, I don't know if it's wiring or what. What explains that?
Well, Elmore Leonard tells you not to write that kind of stuff because nobody reads it. Remember? That's one of his nine or so rules of writing. Don't write what people don't read.
Pat, you have an ability I don't have. You like setting.
Well, I'm going to go back for a second to say about I didn't care about the characters in The Flamethrower.
Yeah.
I particularly cared about Reno.
Reno.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the heroine I really did care about, and she got herself into quite a bunch of crises. So it's just, it was such a broad canvas.
Yeah.
She took me through it. And the landscape took me through it.
Yeah,
of each place.
I'm going to give it a shot. The flamethrower. Okay. We have from Facebook Kelly Shepard writing to say she likes Something Missing and also Memoirs of an Imaginary Friend. These are both by Matthew Dix, who I gather happens to live in West Hartford, Connecticut. And we also have another Facebook, and someone has listed about 10 different books. And I thought, well, here's a reader. This is
yes,
someone who
indeed,
loves
yeah.
books. Yeah. Marion Roy, what do you have?
It's interesting when you were talking about settings, because I do the same thing that you do. When they start going through all these descriptions, I stop reading. But the book that I'm recommending, The Invisible Bridge by Julie Oranger, is a book that starts with a setting, and a friend of mine told me to read it because I was going to Hungary, to Budapest, and she said, this book takes place in Budapest and you must read the book. Well, it takes place in 1937, which was not when I was going to Budapest, but it starts with a young Jewish Hungarian architect who lives in Budapest, and they begin to describe Budapest and the bridges and the museums. And I could picture it because I was just there, which made such a difference in looking at settings. So what happens with him, he gets this letter from someone, which he has to deliver to someone in Paris because he gets a scholarship to go to school there. And what ends up happening is he gets involved in all these mysterious characters and meets this lovely woman, but then the war starts and he's Jewish. And all kinds of things impact his life, as you can imagine. And he ends up back in Hungary with his new wife. And Hungary is kind of on the border of what to do about the Nazis and how involved are they going to get in the war. Mm. And so it goes on to a wonderful, wonderful history of what happens in Hungary during the war. But it's fiction, so you really want to read about it.
You're a historical novel
yeah.
lover.
That can be
so terrific. Remember when the world came alive about that, reading Doctorow?
Oh,
remember
God.
Back then?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Where everybody was saying, oh, I see how this can work. This is, remember that, Pat?
Yeah.
Yes, but I have trouble with what I think of as, quote, historical novels, mm-hmm. but when somebody does it like Birmingham did it, where you're simply there.
Yeah.
It transcends that. I don't like it when it feels like somebody's looking at it from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't quite get into it. But when they're so good, they just pull me right into that moment. And I love that.
That happens for me too. If I'm reading a book and I do not believe this author, I cannot. I don't care whether it's won 57 prizes. If I will have a sense inside, I just don't believe you.
Yeah, but then there's Hilary Mantel, who convinces everybody. Hilary Mantel leaves me speechless. Her genius for writing historical stuff. Wolf Hall, for example, is brilliant.
I've never read that.
Oh, my goodness. It's just so – the writing is ravishing. Ravishing. I mean, she's just a genius. There's going to be a third book soon. So, I'm anxious for that.
Oh, good, good. Pat Towers, thank you so much for being on the book show with us.
You're so welcome. It's been so much fun.
So insightful, your comments. I love hearing your picks. I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Oh, good.
Okay. Take care. Stay warm.
Okay.
Okay. Nice. Thank you, Marion Roy and Lee Jacobus. As always, this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.